Good evening, folks, and a hearty welcome to our drive-in theater. We have a wonderful evening's entertainment lined up for you.
One that will provide several hours of pleasurable relaxation.
Washington, London, Paris, Moscow are key targets. The whole world is under attack.
Who built it? The Russians? The Chinese? Martians? Canadians? I don't care! All I know is we didn't build it, and that's reason enough to assume the worst and blow up the Cane of Cum.
For 100,000 years, it was buried in the snow and ice. Now it has found a place to live. Inside, where no one can see it.
Soldiers and their weapons would be powerless before the onslaught of the beast. The beast. The beast. The beast from 20,000 fathoms.
Guns, tanks, bombs. They're like toys against them.
It's indestructible. It's indescribable. Nothing can stop it. The nation and then the world could fall before the blood-curdling threat of...
Sci-Fi Double Feature Drive-In Podcast.
Welcome to this sci-fi double feature drive-in podcast. I am your conspiracy-loving host, Elisa Breen, which is the last time I'll be saying Breen. And sitting next to me is my radioactive partner in grime, Jarrett the Kaiju Man Weglin.
Huh? What? It feels like I've lived this day once before.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. It must be because we're doing a certain movie today.
We are. We are finishing September's double feature of Sci-Fi Love Fest with a movie with more second chances than Groundhog's Day. Live, Die, Repeat.
Yeah.
Yeah. living it up over and over and over.
Over and over and over. Learning those ways of the warrior.
Learning the ways of the warrior. Full Metal Bitch.
Full Metal Bitch. The Angel of Verdun.
I wish I was as cool as Emily Blunt.
Yeah, me too. Just kidding.
Only one person can be as cool as Emily Blunt, and that's Emily Blunt.
Yeah.
So this movie, I feel like, is an extremely underrated science fiction movie, which is why I wanted to address this movie and why I wanted to, you know, have it as part of our double feature.
Yeah, it kind of flew under the radar, I think. I think it's kind of more popular now that it's on home video, but I didn't really hear much about it when it came in theaters.
No, I didn't even see it when it came in theaters. You showed it to me for the first time when it was on DVD.
Yeah, and that's when I saw it. I just bought it because it was cheap at Walmart.
Yeah, and I didn't even know what it was because the DVD says Live, Die, Repeat. And in theaters, it was called Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah.
So when you put it on for me for the first time, I was like, I don't even know what the fuck this is.
Even if it did say Edge of Tomorrow, I don't think people would really know what it is.
Yeah. Which is really unfortunate that it is so not well known, because this is really an alien war movie that is, you know, much different than a lot of alien war or invasion movies that you have seen before.
Which... Yeah, they really tried to instill at least some realism in this war movie, in the alien war movie.
Yeah, I mean, there's
at least
not,
the look.
Well, there's not much that's unbelievable. Yeah. You know, it's not really that much of a fantasy movie.
No, except the actual alien part.
Yeah. I mean, the alien part's pretty fantastical.
Yeah.
But, I mean, as far as the technology, the situation, you know, as far as the humanity of it, it is very realistic.
It's not like super far in the future. The guns that they have are ones we have today. The cars they have are ones we have today. It's not like the Jetsons kind of buildings or anything.
Yeah, there's no flying cars or anything.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they do say it's set in, well, not in the movie, but it said that it's set in 2061. So, yeah, that's not too far out.
Yeah, I mean, nothing would really change too much except for maybe a little, maybe cooler or worse presidents. I don't know.
We cannot determine that at this time. Yeah. Please call back later.
Yeah.
But let's dive right into the plot. This movie does not start with a boat.
No. Well, it's not a kaiju movie, so.
Well, it's not. We've discussed more recent monster movies that have started with a boat.
Yeah, about 4 out of 4, I think.
Yeah. It's been pretty incredible how many. But no, this does not start with a boat in the ocean. It actually starts with a lot of news clips. Which, yeah. I actually like those kinds of beginnings where it, like, throws you right into reality, right into the moment you're really feeling. You know, because those news clips and everything, it makes you feel like this is reality. This is, because, you know, that was the whole way that people believe so much of the radio broadcast of War of the Worlds.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that it was all done like a news broadcast. He really, you know, put that realism in there, Orson Welles. And so, you know, when a movie starts like that, it's really like, oh shit, I better pay attention.
Yeah, it's an easy way to get a lot of exposition out there.
Mm-hmm.
And some people do talk down on it. It can be overused, and it is looked down upon by a lot of screenwriters, but I think it's a little better than people starting off with voiceovers. Starting off a movie with a voiceover is probably one of the worst ways to start a movie.
Yeah, but there's also good ways to start with news broadcasts, and there's bad ways to start with news broadcasts. Because there's ways, like, people do it to clearly, you know, show that this is, like, a realistic situation, that, you know, show, like, actual footage of, like, an attack or something. And then there's ways that people use it to get away without telling any real story.
Yeah, I mean, I can't talk too much shit. I've done it myself in my own short film. But, it's an easy way to get through a lot of exposition and not have to do that through the dialogue of the movie, because that would take even longer if it's two people talking and trying to get that out through natural dialogue. So you kind of get those points out with clips, like bullet points almost.
Well, and it also shows in this start of the movie the propaganda that Tom Cruise's character created.
Yeah, that's basically his job. He's in the army, but he's a high-ranking official. He's a war PR agent, basically.
Yeah, he's marketing for the army.
Yeah,
if you will.
Yeah, making the army look good.
Yeah, so like the Full Metal Bitch, or, you know, Emily Blunt's character, he builds her up and everything, and commercials and going on talk shows. He gets, you know, a lot of recruits for this army by the way that he presents it and the way that he goes out there. And that's also part of, like, you know, the news clips in the beginning.
Yeah, and he's also, while doing this, he's also pitching this new exosuit, this combat jacket, which is basically going to help them win the war, or at least that's what they say. And it's going to help them fight the creatures, the aliens, which are called mimics in the film.
Yeah, and I mean, back on what we were saying on how this is, like, the technology in this film isn't too far off. It's not too fantastical. I mean, these are things that the Army's experimenting with now.
Oh, yeah. We've seen
types of exosuits.
These exosuits are, if you just search YouTube, exosuit, these ones in the movie look almost exactly the same, like the braces along the legs. Maybe they don't have guns yet, at least the ones we've seen.
But I mean, like, you know, it's not too difficult to imagine a future not far off where that is, you know, the way that the army would fight. Maybe not, you know, in battles against, you know, smaller foes, but, you know, against maybe an alien invasion. I don't know.
Oh, I'm sure we'll use it against whatever we want.
Yeah.
The way we
I'm sure cops will be wearing it in Wyoming.
Yeah.
There's tanks in rural cities. I'm sure that there'll be exosuits in rural cities. But not to get too political, let's move on. Although this movie will be hard not to get too political on, because it is about war.
Yeah.
but so then, we get to Major Cage being flown in a helicopter to England or London.
Yeah.
And, they welcome him with open arms by, the general immediately saying, like, you're going to the front lines.
But. Yeah. He's basically sending him to the front lines, and he's like, I can't even stand the sight of blood.
Yeah, he's, like, Tom Cruise in the beginning, you kind of are like, you're a wiener, and I hate
yeah.
you.
<He's> like, he just smiles, and he's just, he was given to this position just because of basically the silver spoons in his mouth.
Yeah, his status, but when the war started.
Yeah.
And then he tries to blackmail the general by being like, hey, I got everyone on your side. I can get everyone to hate you.
Yeah, with
and
his power.
And so the general's like, arrest that man. And
yeah, he tries to run. He tries to basically desert.
No, he says arrest that man, and then he tries to run.
Oh, yeah. That's
true. He was just walking out of the office like, I'm glad we reached an agreement.
So he basically
on the blackmail.
He tries to run, and then he gets tasered, and there's a basically a jump cut to him laying on some duffel bags, and he's at a army base.
In Heathrow. And yeah. This is a very important waking up moment, because you will see it. Again and again
yeah,
and again.
Yeah, you see this
and
over and over, just like the scene of Bill Murray in Groundhog's Day with him seeing that alarm clock and playing that same song over and over and over.
Yeah. So he wakes up, he's getting called a maggot, and then Bill Paxton shows up.
Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Rest in peace.
Rest in peace.
So good to see Bill Paxton in a good role. Like, I mean, not that he wasn't in good roles. I'm saying in a good role in one of his last movies.
Yeah. I mean, he is fantastic in this movie. Just all of his speeches as an army sergeant. Bill Paxton.
He's so good.
But he gets taken by Bill Paxton, who is a sergeant, I believe. I don't know army terms. And then at first Tom Cruise tries to convince him, like, listen, I'm a major. I don't belong here. This is ridiculous. And Bill Paxton's like, sure, buddy, I'll take you somewhere nice. And then Tom Cruise slowly realizes, no, I'm getting taken nowhere nice.
Basically, Bill Paxton has already been notified that he's going to come in contact with Bill Cage. And he's like, oh, he's been notified that Bill Cage is a deserter, and he just basically needs to be sent into combat and made sure that he gets sent to combat.
Yeah. So, Tom Cruise or Bill Cage. Sorry. We always are so bad at flipping between actors' names and what their actors.
Yeah, Tom Cruise is Bill Cage.
Tom
Major
Cruise is
Cage.
Bill Cage. But so they bring him into the barracks and they introduce him to J Squad, which is the squad he'll be fighting with.
Yeah.
And then pretty much shows him going into battle in the exosuit, and he has no. He pretty much for the first battle, he just is shooting or shouting. How do I turn the safety off?
They don't tell him. None of them tell him.
No, they want him to die.
Yeah, they don't care. Deserters are bullshit to people in this.
Yeah, especially in an alien invasion. It's like you're deserting Earth. You're not just deserting your country. You're deserting Earth.
Because at this point, most of the Earth's militaries have united into the UDF, the United Defense Force.
Yeah.
It's not just like United States, Great Britain, and they're all separate. Now it's united, so it's like one big force fighting the aliens.
Yeah, everyone's fighting together, so don't you be a deserter, Tom Cruise. Bill
Unity. It takes aliens to come together.
Yes. So then the ship they're flying in explodes. He has to, you know, release to the ground. Bunches of people die all around him. Very reminiscent of the fight at the beach of Normandy.
Yeah, it's
in
very,
World War II.
It's like Saving Private Ryan. Yeah, Saving Private Ryan, but with
aliens
exosuits.
And exosuits. Yeah. So he's going through the battle and dies.
Well, yeah, he kills one of the aliens. Called an Alpha. It's kind of like a bigger version of the drone aliens. And they're like one in.
It says like 6.18 million.
Yeah, they're very rare, the alpha versions of these mimics. He kills one of them with a claymore mine. And this is when he starts his loops. Some of the alien's blood gets dripped into Cage's blood. And then he gets...
Well, not some of it. It, like, burns his face off.
Well, yeah. He gets pretty much just completely fused with this alpha. And this is when the loops start. We wake up right when he woke up right on those duffel bags. And we hear that drill sergeant saying, "Wake up, maggot!"
Yeah. And so the first couple loops, he's kind of like, "Listen, okay, somebody listen to me. This is crazy."
Yeah.
And they pretty much, like, tape his mouth shut. They ignore him. They're like, "You're stupid. You're an idiot. This is crazy."
I mean, this is when basically a lot of the comedy starts to show itself. Before this, the movie's kind of played a little more seriously. Okay, it's science fiction, but it's serious. But it's almost impossible to do a movie that loops like this without comedy, I think.
Tom Cruise even said to the director, Doug Liman, he was like, I think he said it to the writers or the director, but he said, "I think that the death scene should be comedic in a way like Wile E. Coyote."
Yeah, and they said it was really fun to think of new ways to kill Tom Cruise.
Yeah, there's one time where he tries to roll underneath a truck and he gets run over. And then Bill Paxton's like, "Why would he do that?"
Yeah, because he's trying to get away to see Emily Blunt's character.
Yeah, Emily Blunt's character. And then there's one point where, you know, he's trying to save another guy and gets crushed in return.
Yeah.
There's another time where, like, a truck just runs into him while he's trying to run towards Emily Blunt.
Yeah, he didn't look both ways, folks.
There wasn't any road there, just a beach. But there's plenty of very comedic moments in the first, I want to say, like, 20 minutes of him looping. And then finally he gets to a point where he's helping Emily Blunt through the battlefield after he had witnessed her die initially. So he's trying to help her because she's like this big hero. So of course he wants to help her through.
She's like, come find me when you wake up, because she realizes she knows what's happening to him.
Yeah. And so she just drops her weapon and she says, "Come find me when you wake up." And they just both explode. And then he wakes up. So then this starts with the looping of him with Emily Blunt's character and them trying to fight what's happening, because basically they know that the aliens or the mimics knew that they were coming. So they need to find how to defeat them, which Emily Blunt reveals that she had previously had the alpha blood and was looping. And that's how she won the battle at Verdun.
Yeah.
And so she knows that there's an Omega, which is like the hive mind of all of the mimics. And so she knows that that's the thing to kill. And so they just continue looping and looping and looping, trying to get to where the mimic is, what she sees in a vision that he has. This all sounds pretty ridiculous about someone like watching it. So there's like visions and then like, you know.
This movie does require a lot of context. But
yeah, this movie is, I just sound crazy like talking about it, I feel like. But so, and it, I mean, it even continues being comedic into, like, the loops with Emily Blunt. Like, she's trying to train him, and he clearly sucks at it. And he'll, like, break his leg, and she's like, "Nope, I gotta shoot you in the head."
Gotta reset.
Gotta reset, because she has one rule, which is, if you start to die, you better finish dying. Because if you get a blood transfusion, you lose the power.
Yeah, that's how she lost her power.
Yeah. So, they get further and further along to where he had the vision of where the Omega is, which is in, like, a dam in the mountains of Germany. And so they get further along. They get off the beach, finally. And, I mean, we have no idea how many loops he's going through.
No.
It could be hundreds. It could be thousands. It could be years. We have no idea.
In the manga that it's based off of, it's in the hundreds, I think. So it's at least been at least a year. So I don't know.
Yeah. Well, she brings up at one point that she had a partner in Verdun that she was doing this with. And she said that I had to watch him die 300 times.
Yeah.
So. But I mean, it seems like he's doing this way more than 300 times. Just want to say.
Well, he gets a lot of training. That's for sure.
Yeah. He gets shot a lot of times by Emily Blunt right in the face. They finally, he's sick of seeing her die, and she won't, like, take no for an answer, and he knows there's this point where they find a helicopter, and he knows that she doesn't get past this point. And she's, like, so stubborn, she will not accept that, like, she has to go and hide for this portion. She's like, "I'm gonna keep going. I'm gonna keep going with you. I'm gonna die anyway." And he just won't accept that. And so he goes that day without her and basically finds out that the Omega sent him a false vision.
It was like a ruse.
A ruse.
A red herring.
Yes. Because the waiting for him there was an alpha, and it tried to, like, bleed him out.
Yeah.
To get the blood that is giving him this power. So then at this point, they find out that, you know, there's this guy that Emily Blunt's character works with that has this type of technology that if plugged into an alpha, you can, like, find out where the Omega is. Which I don't know how to explain that better than that. So they go and they take the technology from the general, which apparently takes multiple times because at one point he's like, don't shoot him again to Emily Blunt's character. And so they get the technology and plug it into him, and he sees it's in the Louvre because what better place?
Oh, it's just a beautiful set piece. They're not going to put it in some fucking field. That's not an interesting scene.
Well, it's underwater. Yeah. In the manga, the creatures are water creatures.
Yeah, well, they suck up water and they spit the water back out and it's poison.
Yeah, so the Omega is living underwater. So then they're like, oh shit, we gotta go there. But then the car crashes and they both, like, pass out. And Tom Cruise gets his blood transfused.
So he loses his power. So he gets one chance to get to go to France.
So that they know they're going to die.
So they assemble a team with J-Squad. And they basically get the... I forget what they call them.
What?
The planes.
The heliplane? I don't know.
So they get in a...
They get in a heliplane. They get in one of those heliplanes.
They get in a hovercraft plane.
It's got spinnies.
I know.
I don't know. Anyway, they get in it and they fly over there. And then just like in the beginning of his day, it gets attacked and then starts to blow up. And it crashes.
Most of J-Squad dies.
Seriously, like in the all first 5 minutes died. Of this attack, all of J-Squad dies. It's pretty ridiculous.
So they get to the Louvre, basically, after a pretty good fight.
And so they get into the underground part of the Louvre, which is, you know, where they need to dive down to where the Omega is. And Emily Blunt's like, you're going to take the bomb, and you're going to give the Omega the bomb. And he's like, no, you don't, no. And they have a battle.
Emily Blunt sacrifices herself by being a distraction, basically, for an alpha that's hunting them. And she ends up getting killed. And Tom Cruise basically jumps into the water and bombs the Omega. But
as he's bombing the Omega, the alpha that killed Emily Blunt jumps in the water and stabs him.
Yeah.
But then he, like, turns around and he's like... Oopsie daisy.
He's got all the pins.
He shows all the pins.
He's got all the pins from the grenades.
And then the Omega blows up, flooding him with
its own blood.
Its special alien blood, which makes him jump back to...
2 days before.
2 days. No, yeah.
Yeah, like 2 days.
The day he flew in.
And then it's basically the very beginning of the movie.
Yeah, and then it's like... There was a big energy wave, and it wiped out all the aliens, and it came from Paris.
And then Tom Cruise he's his old rank, he's his old job, and he goes to Heathrow, and he goes and finds out that J-Squad is still alive. They're doing their drills like nothing ever happened, and he goes and finds Emily Blunt, and she doesn't recognize him, but he just kind of laughs with tears in his eyes, and that's the end.
Yeah.
It's kind of satisfying.
It's a very satisfying ending. If you like happy endings like I do, I like a good happy ending.
I like happy and sad endings, but that ending is satisfying to me. So
I like, you know what, that's true. I like satisfying endings.
Yeah.
Whether it's happy or sad, but you're very satisfied at the end of it.
Yeah.
So, as we did mention, this movie is based off of the manga All You Need Is Kill, which is extremely different from this movie. First of all, the main character is Japanese and he's 20 years old.
He's not, he doesn't have the PR job for the army. He's just a regular
grunt. A regular kid, just a regular private. And, his nickname is Killer Cage.
It ends up being Killer Cage.
Yeah. I don't remember what his real name is, but his nickname, I know that's, you know, kind of the similarity there. And then the name is the same for the girl in the book to the movie, and she's also American.
Vertaski, I think?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
Vertaski. And she also has a nickname, Full Metal Bitch.
Yes, her name, the Full Metal Bitch nickname still stands, but she's American.
She's American, and they go way more into her backstory in the book. And she doesn't lose her looping ability. She, like, goes all over the world.
She actually takes the name from an... That's actually not her name originally in the book. Her name was blacked out. Like, we weren't supposed to know her original name. And then her parents are killed after an alien attack on America. And then she takes the Vertaski name from immigrant's passport, a dead immigrant's passport, and then she joins the army because she was too young.
Yeah, so she steals someone's identity.
Yeah, she steals someone's identity to join the army.
Yeah. But, yeah, there's plenty of differences. Definitely should check out the manga if you want to.
Yeah.
But it's definitely very different from the movie, so don't expect it to be similar.
The monsters are very different, but they're still cool looking. They're kind of like these big, huge globs with huge mouths that just suck up the resources of Earth and spit it back out as poison.
Yeah, to make it more hospitable for them.
And they have little tiny beady eyes. They're really creepy looking. I mean, they're very different, but they're still very effective as being creepy. They spit out like projectiles. I mean, the monsters in the movie do here and there kind of, they shoot out projectiles to shoot the planes down, but they don't really use them much against the humans.
Yeah. It's more of like tentacle attacks.
Yeah, they stab.
So Dante Harper, who wrote the original first draft of the script, ended up being cut out of the final credits, but he still got $1 million for the script from Warner Brothers. Harper's screenplay was listed in the 2010 edition of The Blacklist, which for screenwriters is a big deal.
Yeah, there were so many revisions and drafts that he didn't end up getting any credit at all on the movie.
Which is sad because, you know, being listed on the blacklist, I mean, means that people were enjoying it, but it got cut up so much. Harper found the book too complex to properly adapt, but despite the prospect of not getting paid, he chose to risk it and accepted the job, taking 8 months to write the script. Upon completion, Warner Brothers purchased it, which we mentioned before. The studio hired Doug Liman to direct the film the following August. 6 months before filming started, Liman had discarded around two-thirds of the original Harper script. The script would go through many revisions and writers, including changes during actual filming. So, filming started without even a finished script. He wrote the script while he was filming, pretty much. Like, there wasn't even a third act until, like, the last second.
Yeah, I mean, if we looked at the script, we would not really recognize it from the movie, I think, because it seemed like Liman really changed a lot of, especially the dialogue, because he worked with a lot of the actors just to make sure a lot of the dialogue was more punchy and more energy-driven and just more natural. So I think he really just that's where a lot of the change came when it was on set, too.
Yeah, like he would go back and have actors re-record lines if he felt like something else would feel better. And, actually, when he was casting, there weren't any characters written for J-Squad, and he just picked actors he liked and wrote characters around them.
Yeah, most of the interaction in the book is between Cage and Vertaski's characters, and then instead of the movie where Cage is trained by Vertaski, Cage is actually trained by his superior instead, and that seems to be like one of the only main characters he talks to in the book.
Yeah. So Brad Pitt was actually an early choice for Major Cage, but he couldn't take the part due to scheduling. And Brad Pitt had actually worked with Doug Liman previously on Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Ryan Gosling was also considered for the job, but Tom Cruise won in the end.
I'm not really sure either of those would have been as good as Tom Cruise.
Well, Tom Cruise is definitely different. I mean, when you watch, like, the special features and stuff and you see him interacting with Doug Liman, like, he's a very direct actor. And he is very dedicated. And, like, I'm sure it's just a very different experience working with Tom Cruise as an action star, you know? Mm-hmm. But he's very direct, and it seems like probably that worked well with Doug Liman. It might not work well with other people, but he's like, I feel like my character would do this. I feel like my character would do that.
Yeah.
We should do this. Like, he's not afraid to, like, make very strong choices. So, I mean, it wouldn't be the same movie without Tom Cruise.
No. And throughout Tom Cruise's career, I think he's always had a good sense of comedic timing as well through his movies. I mean, everybody looks at him as an action star, but even though he hasn't been in, like, super big comedies or anything, I think that he has a good little...
I think he's a good action comedy star.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
He's good at those moments, you know?
Yeah, those little like the little periods on the sentences of little, I don't know what the fuck to say.
It's really all about comedic timing in his instance, like, you know, and just the way he can say something, like the punch he'll add at the end of it. I get what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah.
No, Tom Cruise, I think, like, he was a good choice for this role. And, you know, And I'll admit it, I have not been a big Tom Cruise fan my whole life. You know, I was apprehensive when you put this DVD in and it had Tom Cruise on the cover.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a huge Mission Impossible fan or anything like that. But I respect Tom Cruise's ability, you know, especially after seeing this movie and especially seeing that, you know, he does all his own stunts. And, I mean, he's incredibly dedicated and he is... talented for who he is, you know?
Yeah.
For what he does, he is very talented.
Yes. Yeah, say what you will about Tom Cruise, but he is dedicated and he is a total movie star, I think.
And a total crazy person.
Say what you will.
You know what? Crazy people can be very talented.
I think he is... I have my opinions about his personal life. But until he does something really, really bad, I'm going to enjoy his movies all throughout.
Yeah.
I really love a lot of his movies.
Yeah. Well, I definitely think he's one of the best action stars, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Of recent times.
Mm-hmm. And he can do it all.
Yeah. And seriously, man does all his own stunts. Pretty fucking impressive. And he's one of, like, the only people who can ride a motorcycle.
Yeah.
He's in the film industry.
And a lot of action stars, they will do something like the action parts, so like doing a lot of their own stunts, but then they can't hold an interesting conversation with their co-stars. Like, he's got good charisma between his co-stars, and his delivery of lines is very interesting. And I just think he's a total package when he's casted right.
Yeah, when he's casted correctly, he does a great job. Like, there's so many dramatic moments in this movie that he hits very well.
Yeah.
Comedic moment, he hits very well. I mean, and you never notice that he's, like, a very, very short person.
Yeah, that's... I didn't even think of that. So,
they did an excellent job. I think it was the exosuit. They were able to put some platform heels in there for him.
His is probably a little taller. And Emily Blunt was doing yoga sometimes. So
she can actually do that move.
Oh, I know.
There was, when she had to do it for extended periods of time, they used a wire, but she can actually do that.
Yeah, yeah.
She studied Krav Maga. during this movie.
Yeah, she looks good.
She is awesome. She did all her own stunts too, except for when they were doing like pickup shoots at the end, she was pregnant.
She was preggos.
Which I understand. You know, you don't want to get hit in the wrong place.
Yeah.
But anyway, moving on. So Doug Liman played Dennis a fuck ton. That is something I wrote down. it's true. We were watching the special feature, like, documentary.
It starts with him playing tennis, and it ends with him playing tennis.
Yeah, he fucking loves tennis, you guys. Like, one of the guys who's in the J Squad, he was like, we had to do this whole boot camp thing, and we never saw him. We thought, like, oh, he must be so busy.
He's taking meetings.
He's so stressed out. And then one day we go into this one building. He's playing tennis. He was playing tennis for like 3 hours.
Yeah, in this behind the scenes featurette, it just starts with no words said. And it's just this guy hitting tennis balls really hard. And then the director of the behind-the-scenes video, I think, is like, why are you doing this? And then he's like, I got to keep up with Tom. And it's like, you know Tom rides motorcycles and flies airplanes. And he does a lot crazier shit than
tennis. Although Doug Liman tennis. Doesn't seem like he's all there.
he's a little off. he did make Jumper. That movie was weird.
He seems like a weird dude. I'm not going to lie. He's like, we'll just start the movie, no script. Let's go. Okay, this scene has no dialogue, but I know what I want. So, and then he literally, like, he would be, like, blocking people. And they would say, like, oh, yeah, I would tell him, like, you know, something I wanted. And he'd be like, okay, go. And then he'd be like, action. And he'd just hold a hand up to his face like he was pretending to film him. He seems like a pretty weird guy to work with.
Yeah, usually directors will have a lens that they'll look through to kind of see what the actual settings of the camera are gonna capture. But he was just looking through his fingers.
Yeah, like a crazy person. So this movie had quite the title change. It does make a difference. It's not like, you know, how there's different titles in different countries. Like, literally the title of this movie was changed. And Doug Liman has a quote on this title change. He said, so the book was called All You Need Is Kill, Japanese. I was making a comedy, an action comedy, and All You Need Is Kill didn't feel like it was the tone of the movie I had made. The studio wanted to call it Edge of Tomorrow, and I wanted to call it Live, Die, Repeat. I fought vehemently and lost. And then when the film came out and people loved it, but the box office wasn't as good as it should have been, I really railed into the executive at Warner Brothers, who insisted that Edge of Tomorrow was the better title.
Fucking dumb. It doesn't. I mean, Edge of Tomorrow is so vague, it doesn't say much about it at all.
Yeah, I mean, I do like Live, Die, Repeat.
That has a little bit of a comedic edge to it. I don't know why I'm saying
that. Yeah, I mean, it does. It does give you more of an idea of what it is about. I mean, it gives you a complete idea of what it is about. Live, Die, Repeat.
And it has a little bit of comedy, kind of like Lather, Rinse, Repeat. You know?
Yeah.
But Edge of Tomorrow is just like, oh, it's just some random sci-fi movie. It can be. Yeah. It could be anything, basically.
And they were originally going to go with the manga title, All You Need Is Kill, but they were concerned that kill was in the title.
Oh, whatever.
Whatever.
These fucking PC pussies.
Oh, my God. Jared. So, moving on to production. Principal photography began at Leavesden?
I think it's Leavesden.
Leavesden on October 1st, 2012. It was at Leavesden Studios near London. Warner Brothers purchased Leavesden as a permanent studio site after previously renting space there for its production of the Harry Potter films. But anyway, they built on the back lot the beach that they fought on, and it's based off of a beach in London that they originally were going to film on, but thought better of it
Are there any, like, time travel spells in Harry Potter?
There is a time... Babe, are you fucking serious? Yeah. Hermione has a time changer.
Oh, yeah, like, that's right.
I've only seen,
like, the movies.
I have the time changer necklace. This guy here.
I'm asking you honestly. Don't.
Yeah, no, there's not a spell. There is a time changer necklace.
I just give you the answers when you ask me about kaiju, but then you just... You just, like, persecute me when I have an honest question about Harry Potter.
I'm sorry. There's
I'm just trying to learn.
The time turner.
Okay.
It's a time turner. And
is it a spell or is it an amulet kind of thing?
It's a necklace and you just, it looks like a little hourglass.
Uh-huh.
And you just turn it and then you go back in time.
To the amount of time that you set it to?
I don't know. They don't really explain that. Oh. It's like one turn for an hour, 400 turns for a day. I don't know.
You could change the future?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they use it to change the future.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
They use it to help Sirius escape.
They should have helped Alan Rickman in real life. Cancer, right? Cancer?
I don't think you can stop cancer with time travel, babe.
Maybe.
Okay. On the second day of shooting, Lyman demanded a total reshoot of everything filmed on day one.
Producers don't like that.
No, they don't.
Producers are the ones that get yelled at by the executive producers.
Yeah, and they really don't like when you reshoot everything that you just shot. And filming on the beach was set to be scheduled to last only 2 weeks, but it extended to nearly 3 months. Due to what people kindly called the director's self-described workshoppy filming style.
Yeah.
Also known as he reshoots and 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 reshoots.
I like that, though.
If I was working for him, I would reshoot myself in the head.
Well, you can't loop back, so.
No, but I wouldn't want to because then I'd have to reshoot again.
I think he should be allowed to do that.
Well, he can do whatever he wants. If someone's paying him and it's fine with them, you can. It's a free fucking country. Whatever you fucking want. So they actually did land a helicopter in Trafalgar Square in London, but they only had 3 hours to film it.
Yeah, they had to shut down that whole big area in London, which is why they only had 3 hours to do it, which is actually longer than I thought they would.
Yeah, they had to do it in like one take. They like set everything up, did it, and took it all down. It took them 3 hours. Operation Downfall, the name the movie gave to the planned invasion, was in fact a real planned invasion. The final invasion of the Japanese home islands to end World War II. The real Operation Downfall, however, never happened, as the dropping of the atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki brought about the surrender of Japan and Godzilla.
Well, it actually birthed Godzilla.
That's why I said it brought around Godzilla.
So another connection to World War II is that this film was released in the U.S. on the anniversary of the D-Day invasion, which is pretty much because of them on the beach is
the D-Day invasion.
Yeah.
It was the 70th anniversary of the D-Day invasion.
The 70th anniversary of the D-Day invasion.
And it premiered in two sequential events designed to mirror the D-Day landings within the exact timeline of the historic event. Doug Liman really wanted you to relate this to World War II.
Well, he wanted to put as much realism as he could into this movie.
Well, he really did. He really wasn't a fan of alien invasion movies. He was a fan of war movies and World War II movies.
Yeah.
And so he wanted to make this an alien World War II movie, basically. And he did it. I'm going to say it was successful as fuck.
To me, it was.
Good job. You did it. Here's your trophy. Here's your sign.
No.
So, Edge of Tomorrow actually, or Live, Die, Repeat, received critical acclaim. Critics praised the humor, the aliens' design, and the performances of Cruise and Blunt. Oh, and the time loop premise's ability to remain fresh. However, some critics had issues with the film's conclusion. Because some people don't like to be happy. Some people like to be miserable. So, review website Rotten Tomatoes reports that 91% of critics gave the film a positive review with a rating average of 7.5 out of 10. The website's critical consensus reads, "Gripping, well-acted, funny, and clever. Edge of Tomorrow offers entertaining proof that Tom Cruise is still more than capable of shouldering the weight of a blockbuster action thriller."
Another person that enjoyed the film was the writer of the graphic novel, Hiroshi Sakurazaka. He thought the film was very well done, and they actually invited him to the set of the movie, where he put on one of the exosuits, and he walked around in it a little bit.
I'm sure he had a lot of fun.
Yeah, it probably was kind of cute.
So the film stumbled during its opening weekend. It only grossed $28.7 million and was quickly written off by many as a box office bomb. However, thanks to Cruise's international appeal and good word of mouth, it managed to show its worth throughout the summer and became a sleeper hit, grossing $369.2 million worldwide, making it the 19th highest grossing film of 2014, which even in my opinion is too low. Should have been like top five.
I can't remember what came out that year, but probably, yeah.
I can't remember what came out last week. So there actually is, you know, in my opinion, quite the discussion of feminism here. Feminism alert, hashtag feminism. So Emily Blunt, who plays Sergeant Rita Vrataski, you know, a lot of people would say that her role is very feministic. I don't know how you'd even say that. Anyway, she is a veteran who guides and trains Tom Cruise through the movie. And Blunt said of her role, "In these female-fueled genres, it's usually the woman who's holding the hand of the guy, and he's running through explosions leading her. And I wanted to be doing the leading." Some people say that this film is feminist, and some people say it's not, because they do end up making her a romantic counterpart. However, I do have to defend Emily Blunt here and say that, you know, I do find this incredibly female-empowering and all that. And defend the romantic part, because the kiss between Cage and Rita before the final battle was unscripted and a surprise to Tom and the director, because Emily said afterwards, "It just felt right. It felt right, and I did it." So, you know, it felt right to her as a character, and it felt right to her in the moment, and she felt like, you know, it was something that her character would do. And part of female empowerment and feminism is you support women on whatever they do, whether they want to kiss the guy or not. Yeah. And she's still a badass motherfucker the whole film, so leave her alone.
And it doesn't, the romantic part doesn't really overtake the film. It's something that develops throughout the film.
I mean, if you pay attention to, like, how much it loops, like, he's known her for years and everything. They've been through war together, and at the end, you don't really feel like it's so much romantic as, like, this incredible closeness that, like, really doesn't have a word for it. Like, when he sees her at the end and he knows that she's alive, like, he is literally crying from how happy he is. Yeah. And he just smiles when he sees her because he's just so happy that she's her and she's alive. And
even when she doesn't recognize him, he's totally cool with that. Just the fact that she's alive.
He's just so happy. And, like, he really accepts her for her. I mean, as cold and as, you know, traumatized as she is. Seriously, I really think that they did a great job with this role, this female role.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and then when someone calls her the Full Metal Bitch, she actually punches him out.
Oh.
Fun fact, is actually her little brother.
Let's go to special effects.
Woo!
The exosuits that they build for the army soldier guys are not CGI.
Not CGI in any way. They are fully, what you see on screen is completely built and painted and everything.
There might be a little enhancement, like
maybe a little. But I know the noises are definitely
the noises. The
editing.
the muzzle flash from the guns were CGI.
But like the wear and tear, the metallic look.
The actual suits.
The actual suits, the hinges, everything.
They're all,
that is all built.
Yeah, they're all composite. They, even though they were made from composite materials, they were still heavy.
Oh, yeah. They were. They weighed between 85 to 90 pounds. And some of the bigger ones, like the tank suits and stuff, were like 120 to 125 pounds. Yeah. Actually, when Emily Blunt first put on her suit, she started crying because she didn't expect it to be so heavy.
Yeah, and Tom Cruise called her a wuss.
I'm sure it was just a jocular type joking between friends.
I hope so.
Because if Tom Cruise is really that mean to Emily Blunt, I'm going to have to kill him.
Well,
actually, he was the one who suggested that she be cast because he wanted to work with her so bad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, Emily Blunt, you're a true blue.
True blue.
True blue.
Okay.
Anyway, the battle suit for Blunt's character had red slash marks sprayed on it to reflect a Joan of Arc quality, which, hell yeah. More feminism right there.
Yeah.
Poo-poo. More feminism.
So they tried to use as little CGI as possible for this movie. I mean, obviously the mimics are CGI, but a lot of, all the sets are built and are practical. And But for the mimics, the director would run around and give the actors something to look at and for their eye lines to follow. And he would run around screaming and sometimes it'd even surprise some of the actors, like, what is this noise coming at me? And it was something.
Doug Liman screaming on set.
Yeah, it's just confirming some of our thoughts on Doug Liman that he's a little off, but
but I mean, like, it's incredible when you watch like the behind the scenes how the set really is like completely built out, like even like the smoke and the mortars exploding and everything, it all is there. I mean, there's a green screen like around the set, so
yeah,
like the background.
That's common these days.
Yeah, but I mean, like the crashed planes and, you know, everything else is built and there.
I mean, the mortars are air mortars, which are just compressed air pushing.
Yeah, just
dirt.
Exploding the sand up.
Yeah, but
I mean, it's they're obviously gonna put in like, you know, things that would kill people.
Yeah.
Later, but they have them up on strings and they're throwing them around. And,
yeah.
I mean, it's pretty intense when you watch how much they did to make it look real in practical effects.
Yeah, they're not using CGI when Tom Cruise is in the air flying around, or when anybody's flying around in the air. They're actually on like cables, on a cable system, which is really kind of cool to just beyond that, and especially when Tom Cruise is doing his own stunts, he's like flying around, being dragged on the sand and on the concrete. It's really cool to see that. And actually, when with the mimics, Guillermo del Toro was on the early design phase on those, but a lot of the design for that he did was changed later on, which is kind of a pity.
Yeah, it almost bears no resemblance to the original Guillermo del Toro design, which
and we couldn't
such a pity.
I couldn't find any concept art online, so I didn't really get to see like his early designs, which is a pity because he's really good at designing monsters. He designed all those Pacific Rim monsters, Pan's Labyrinth, the new one that's coming out with the like that sea monster. I forget the name of it.
Apparently that thing has sex with her.
Well,
I mean, like, you know, I'm not saying like, oh no, I'm not gonna see it, but like, because Guillermo del Toro is amazing, everybody. Guillermo del Toro is like one of our heroes. We went and saw his museum exhibit that he had, like all the stuff that's in his house. It was amazing. It was gorgeous. It was beautiful.
Yeah, love him.
Oh, he's so fucking talented. And he's so nice. He's so sweet. Oh, I have a coworker who used to work with him, and she was like, nicest guy. And I was like, totally expect it. Anyway, and we're talking about a movie that has almost nothing to do with Guillermo del Toro.
That's okay.
We're going to have to do a Guillermo del Toro film.
Yeah.
If you want us to do a Guillermo del Toro film, please tweet us at SFDFDI Podcast.
There'll be one for sure.
Well, we're definitely doing Pacific Rim at some point.
We have to.
At least. Maybe we'll do the new weird sex fish movie.
I want to.
Anyway, boo the sequel. We don't need a sequel. It wraps up fucking fine. Leave it alone.
Well, that's her opinion.
It's got a stupid fucking name. Live, Die, Repeat, and Repeat.
The name's stupid. But
I really don't think it needs a sequel.
I don't know if it needs a sequel or not, but...
It doesn't.
I'll see it.
It doesn't need to see... Like, it wraps up so perfectly. There's no room for more story. No.
But the sequel may be a prequel. That's what they're saying.
Oh, about her at Verdun.
Maybe.
I would be into that. If it was her fighting at Verdun, I would be down for that.
Tom Cruise and Emily Blunt are supposed to be signed on for it. And the original director. So I don't know what they're going to do. It's time travel.
It's not.
It's time travel. It could be anything.
I really hope it's not more story after. I hope it's a prequel.
But it could be. I mean, it's not based on a book, so it could be iffy.
It's based on a manga.
Not a sequel.
Oh.
I think that they took everything from the books already. So.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, I mean, I want to see it because I like the first movie, but it could suck.
It could suck very easily.
But...
Like, super easy it could suck.
Yeah, it could suck.
But I don't have a lot of hope for it. We'll see. Anyway, so that's it for September. Next time you hear from us, we'll be married.
Yep.
We're going to be married. So thank you for sticking with us for this sappy-soaked month full of icky, goopy love. Anyway, yeah. So if you guys like doing more recent sci-fi movies, let us know. You like retro feel, let us know.
This one was our most modern movie that we did.
Yeah. Willow Creek was a little older.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's more indie. This is definitely more mainstream. But yeah, I mean, we want to hear your guys' opinion. Please continue to interact with us on Twitter at SFDFDI Podcast. Let us know what you think, because we care. We scare because we care, as monsters would say. Anyway, do we have any shout-outs this week, babe?
Yes.
Any shouting out?
So, I was giving hints at what this movie was going to be this episode, and people were not getting the hints.
When I posted on Facebook and Instagram, it was a picture, and people got it right away. So, the people I have to shout out got it quick, but I guess on Twitter, where it's just words, it was harder.
The guy finally... guested on Twitter is Lee Brady. He is editor for Big Picture Reviews, so you should go ahead and check him out. He's also the co-host of Atlantic SC Podcast, so you should check him out. He's from Ireland, so go ahead and follow him on Twitter also at Big Pick Reviews. So yeah, there's your shout out, Lee, and yeah, go ahead and take it away, Lisa.
All right, on Instagram, the person who guessed it correctly is Cinematic Randomness.
Yeah, we've talked about him before.
We love dearly. Kevin, right?
Yeah, you should be following him anyways.
Yeah. You can follow him on Instagram at cinematic_randomness, and you should.
And you should follow him on Twitter also at cinematic_rand.
Rand. He has a website, and it's cinematicrandomness.com, and he does movie reviews, which are all delightful, and you should be reading right now. Well, not right now. Please finish this episode, and then go and visit and read them. And the person who guessed it on Facebook is Joshua Habito. So, yay!
Joshua!
You're awesome. We checked out your profile. You have a picture with one of our heroes.
Oh.
The late and the great.
Haruo Nakajima.
Yeah.
I can't believe you met him. I never got to meet him.
I know. We're so jealous. Please, like, message us and tell us what it was like. Hug him.
What does his touch feel like?
Ew, don't be weird about it.
Is it like God?
He's like, yeah, is it like God? Was it like hugging God? But anyway, thank you guys so much for participating in our guessing game.
Yeah, thank you. Our next episode, we'll have a poll on Twitter probably.
Oh, yeah. Keep an eye out, you guys, for a poll on Twitter on what next month's theme should be.
We're going to have a range of topics.
Because it's my birthday month, yeah, so I'm going to pick some topics.
She's going to pick the topics. You won't know the movies yet, but it'll be topics you can choose from. So make sure you vote on that at SFDFDI Podcast.
SFDFDI
Podcast. See, I'm the one that runs the Twitter, so I know it.
SFDFDI Podcast. Say it 10 times fast. Okay, anyway, thank you so much for listening. You're all wonderful.
Make sure you stay till the end so you can listen to those promos of our friends' podcasts.
Indeed, and make sure you subscribe, rate, and review.
Subscribe, rate, and review SFDFDI Podcast on Twitter.
Well, subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes.
Yeah, that too. Yeah,
this has been a weird ending. Can you please, a podcast.
Please give us a review. None of that 4-star, 3-star, 2-star, 1-star. Give us a 5-star.
All right. Thank you so much. We love you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Have a good night, day, morning. Bye-bye.
Good day at work.
And hail Godzilla.
Praise Godzilla.
Praise him.
Praise him. Praise the Lord.
Praise Godzilla.
Praise the Lord. I'm feeling him in my toes.
I have him look over you.
See what movie's playing next at Sci-Fi Double Feature Drive-In on Instagram, Facebook, and our website, justaddthat.com. Catch us on Twitter at SFDFDI Podcast.
We sure hope you enjoyed the movie. Thank you for joining us. As always, we're glad to have you. Please replace your speaker, dispense of all trash, and watch for children as you carefully exit our theater. Good night.
Hey, do you like movies?
Hey, do you like podcasts?
If you do, then come on down and listen to the Home Video Hustle podcast, homie.
Hustle, hustle.
Every Friday, we talk about whatever movie PJ picks out the bag. What does that mean? Well, every Wednesday on our YouTube page, I pick a bunch of movies at random. Sometimes there's a theme to it, sometimes not. PJ picks the movie out, and guess what? We watch it on Friday. We talk about it for about maybe an hour, hour and a half, whatever we feel like doing. Might give you something good to watch, baby. Come on down every Friday.
So come get your hustle on with Home Video Hustle.
You can find the show on any podcatcher app, or you can come down to homevideohustle.podbean.com. All of them in one place for you, so you can go ahead and binge it like it's Netflix. We ain't the defenders, but I like to think we a little bit better than that. Come out at your boys, man. Come chill with us. Peace.
Peace.
You ever watch Kung Fu?
I love Kung Fu.
If you love Kung Fu, join me on the Kung Fu Drive-In Podcast, a weekly show where we discuss, debate, and dissect Kung Fu and martial arts movies past, present, and future. Available now on iTunes and Google Play Music. You can find me on social media on Twitter and Instagram at Kung Fu Drive-In, the Facebook page Kung Fu Drive-In Podcast, or our blog, kungfudrivein.com. Just remember, your Kung Fu may be good, but mine is better.
I know Kung Fu.
Hi, I'm Ellen, and I'm scared we exist in the Matrix.
I'm Jaslyn, and I'm bad at ad-libbing.
And you're listening to
High Expectations,
the promo. For our international listeners, you can appreciate our cute New Zealand accents. For our local listeners, you might bump into us in the street 3 times in the same hour. Our podcast is about pop culture,
sexuality,
relationships,
interesting hobbies,
banter, and ragging on each other.
You can find us on
Apple Podcasts,
SoundCloud,
Pocket Casts,
Podcast Addict,
or anywhere you might like to find podcasts.
Yay, please subscribe.
Goodbye.